Hey, it's June 23rd, and this is Beginner's Puck, a podcast for hockey fans both new and old. I am so excited on this episode. Actually, I'm excited and I'm sad because my podcast partner, Erica, is right now in London, which is awesome for her, very sad for me. But she also flew out on the night of the NHL Awards and the expansion draft, which I don't know, I'm questioning her dedication to hockey, to be honest. But as a special surprise, we have a guest. I'm so thrilled to have Rachel Donner from Hockey Feels as our very first Beginner Puck guest. Rachel, welcome to Beginner's Puck.
Hello.
Okay, now you have your own hockey podcast called Hockey Feels.
I do. Well, it's not just me.
Well, true.
I have a partner in crime there, which is coincidentally Erica's husband, Stephen Shabansky.
This is sort of like podcast swinging, you know,
we're doing a little partner swing. Kind of is.
So why don't you tell us about Hockey Feels that you and Stephen do?
Sure. So one of the reasons why I'm excited about this podcast is because the Flyers are taking over. I myself am also a Flyers fan. Ooh. And Stephen is, of course, an Oilers fan. So we talk about the trials and tribulations of being a hockey fan for teams that may not have had much success recently, and what it's like to be kind of rebuilding toward another hopeful Stanley Cup, and talk about the news of the week. And that's pretty much what we do.
Yeah, it's fun because it does cover very general stuff, but it's nice to have sort of a somewhat slant on those two individual teams.
Yes.
Except
but we don't have to talk about the Oilers, do we?
No, we don't have to. There was that really awkward moment when we had the Connor McDavid and, you know, the little tiff with the Flyers. That was...
Oh yeah,
that got a little odd. But other than that, it's been great, and I'm so excited to have you on here because this is just about the first anniversary of when I first started avidly following hockey. And during that time, you were one of the people that I reached out to and asked like 40,000 questions constantly. And so you sort of like led me through some of the beginner's things that I had to learn. And also you were there for a very seminal moment in my life because I have never hugged anyone spontaneously because of sport. And we were at that amazing Philadelphia Flyers, Buffalo Sabres game where they came back like in the last 3 minutes and came up 3 goals and tied and went into a shootout. And Travis Konecny got his first NHL goal that night.
That was a really fun game.
I was moved to hug. I don't hug like that.
Hockey does that to you sometimes.
It was very exciting.
Takes you places you don't know you can.
That was a moment. So anyway, that's why I'm very excited to have you here. And also, like, you just are so knowledgeable about hockey. It's great to have an expert on. So let's get right into it and talk about this Wednesday night, which was super exciting because we had the NHL Awards rolled into the Vegas Golden Knights expansion draft. Now, the awards.
So the awards themselves were fine. I don't think there was any argument with any of them, really.
No. Were there any surprises there for you at all?
No.
Really?
No. I mean, some of the kind of lesser awards, you never really know who's going to get them, you know, like the Foundation Award or the right. Mark Messier Leadership Awards, which he picks anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously there's the statistic-based ones that you already know in advance. The only minor disappointment was that Wayne Simmonds didn't win the Foundation Player Award.
Yeah.
But Travis Hamonic is such a great guy, and his little, I don't know if you saw the little video.
I did not.
Really great guy and, really great causes he works towards. So, I think the only one that you could maybe say shouldn't have won is Torts, because winning coach of the year for the Jack Adams Award, most of the time, if you have a runaway Vezina mm-hmm. winner, such as Bobrovsky was.
Right. Which is the goalie award.
The goalie award. you don't give the award to the coach and the goaltender because normally you ride on your goaltender, and if that's not working, it's the coaching that's putting all the other pieces together to overcome the bad goaltending.
Right.
So for them, for Columbus to have won both of those is a little unusual.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, we had to introduce Charlotte the Podcat, who is a
who's
a regular guest on Hockey Feels as well. So we haven't had a cat yet on Beginner's Puck. I know on our other podcasts we frequently have cats, but this is a first. So we get a first guest and a first podcast guest. Yeah, so the NHL awards are, there's a couple different ways they're awarded, like you alluded. There's some that are just statistic-based. So the most goals, the most points per year, that sort of thing. And then there's ones that are awarded by the Hockey Writers Association. I'm not sure if I have that correct. The Hockey Writers Association? Okay. And then there's some that are voted on, or there's one that's voted on by the players in the Players Association. So there's a couple different avenues for that award being given. And I think the only one that I was mildly surprised by was the Norris, because Brent Burns had an amazing season, and he just was so gifted offensively. And there was a point that there was a chart that was showing goal leaders at, or teams that had the most goals, and like Brent Burns was in there individually because he just was doing so well. But he, you know, he plays for San Jose, and they kind of flamed out early. Do you know what I mean? And then you had Erik Karlsson, who hockey writers tend to be like really enamored with, at, rightly so, because.
Oh, I am enamored with him.
Who isn't enamored with Erik Karlsson? But he had such a strong postseason game, you know, playing injured and everything. So that one, that could have gone either way. You know what I mean? Like for me, so, I think that was a little surprising.
Yeah, the thing about the Norris Trophy, though, is that it's voted based on regular season performance.
Right.
So I was 100% with you that if you included the playoffs, Karlsson should have won it. Mm-hmm. But regular season only, Brent Burns was the correct.
And see, I didn't know that until after the award was given, because I was like, whoo, that's interesting. Like, I'm surprised that he won it over Karlsson. Not that I don't think he should, he shouldn't have, because, you know, again, he had an amazing year. But I didn't realize it was only up until the playoffs started. So that clarified it a little bit for me after, but at the time watching it, I was like, okay, that's interesting. So I think that's the only one that caught me off guard. And then we had the expansion draft itself, the Hockey Hunger Games.
Lord.
I know that, you know, I'm not even going to talk about the award ceremony itself, because at times it was just cringeworthy. I was assaulted by Penn and Teller, who I loathe. I don't want them on my screen. I mean, and there they were with dumb skit, you know, skit after skit.
And then there was Pierre.
I'm not going to, no, I'm sorry. We're not going to talk about Pierre McGuire. We're just not. Just not. I mean, it's not Mike Milbury level of bad, but yeah. All right. So let's talk about the expansion draft. Were there any surprises there, do you think?
You know, it's hard because there were so many leaks ahead of time.
Oh, yeah. Hockey, it was like blood in the water for hockey writers.
I think there was only maybe three or four that we didn't know.
Right.
Ahead of it. So there weren't really any surprises, per se, during the broadcast. Now, were there a couple surprises in the leaks? Yeah. I mean, I would say the Flyers pick was a bit of a shocker.
Really? Who did you think for the Flyers that you would have picked? If
Raffel or Reed.
Okay.
And I would even have put Neuvirth in the mix.
Yeah, that was, I kind of was thinking that a little bit too, because George McPhee originally drafted him, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he said something not that long ago that he was, and I'm air quoting hard on this, like a technically perfect goalie. And I'm like, oh, is this like laying the groundwork for something here? I don't know.
You know, and who knows what's going to happen. This, my whole thing was that for this expansion draft, I just didn't care who the picks were across the board, or I couldn't care, more like, because you knew there was going to be side deals being made. And then after the freeze was over Thursday morning, where all the teams could get back into the trade pool,
Right.
You just didn't know what was going to happen. And so I felt like even with those picks, you know that obviously, you know, they picked 30 guys and you have a 23-man roster. Somebody's going to get flipped. Five or six guys are going to get flipped. So, and in fact, one of them was already flipped Thursday during the day. Mm-hmm. So in Trevor Van Riemsdyk, so went to Carolina. So, you know, I didn't think it mattered as much.
Yeah. And I want to talk about it a little bit because as we talked about leading up to this, you know, Eric and I have been sort of, you know, seeding the ground for what the expansion draft means and what it does. And so basically there was a flurry of trades prior to everything sort of shutting down to give Vegas its window. So, you know, we had the Jonathan Duran trade, which I think was the biggest one probably of all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you had the general managers sort of trying to get their pieces in place. You know, they knew they were going to lose some people and what they could do to shed some salary cap and all the other big things that go on in trying to, you know, kind of get your team ready. So then trading shut down and then all the teams released their protected list. So then Vegas Golden Knights knew who their pool was. They had an opportunity to examine everything.
Ah, but did they influence that pool with these secret side deals?
Well, you never know. Because there's been all sorts of conversation going on and saying, yeah, we'll talk to anybody about anything and, you know, come at us and let us know if there's a player that you would rather have us take. Maybe you need to shed some salary cap space because as we've discussed, you know, teams only have so much money to spend because there is a cap and they have to negotiate that space very carefully, especially if you have players who are coming up to free agency who you want to re-sign, they're going to want some more money. So, you know, there's kind of all these really intricate Jenga pieces going on. So, yeah, there was a flurry of things happening prior to this. But then once, you know, Vegas made their picks, you know, they made their picks Wednesday night. And as of Sunday morning, it was 8:00 Eastern, all bets were off. Trades could resume, and then you started seeing a little bit more action.
Vegas wound up with, now they have 3 first-round draft picks.
Yes. So one thing I wanted to ask you in looking at this, because it's not just looking at this team, this is not the Vegas Golden Knights that we're going to see in October when gameplay starts, because like you said, there's going to be a lot of movement. But I don't think this is also not the team that we're going to see next season because a healthy chunk of the players that they picked, this is the last year of their contract. They're going to be free agents next year.
Exactly. So I think there's going to be a combination of things that they're just eating these contracts to let them ride out to get to the cap floor initially. Mm-hmm.
Why don't you describe what the cap floor is? Because we've never really talked about what a cap floor is, only what the cap, you know, the top of the cap is, the cap limit.
Sure. So there's a limit, but there's also a floor, which is, oh God, I don't know what exactly it is.
It's 50-something million.
Yeah, that they have to reach. So they have to spend a minimum amount of money on their roster.
Right.
So, they're going to use some of these larger contracts to get well above the cap floor for this first year. And then with some of the veterans, they could potentially turn around and trade them at the trade deadline next season, just before those contracts expire and get more assets for them, most likely more draft picks in the next couple of years, but potentially other assets as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because we saw a flurry of trades right before the trade deadline this year, and for players without, they were calling them rentals, which I didn't quite understand what that meant.
Yes.
But it's basically like Shattenkirk, who was traded from St. Louis to Washington Capitals because they needed a defenseman and they were really running hard for the cup. They had a shot at it, so they wanted to bolster that. So do you see any of these veterans on there perhaps being played at that, like that sort of a chip?
I don't know specifically. Maybe Nate Schmidt.
Do you really think Nate Schmidt? Now he's the young defenseman from Washington Capitals, who I think that was the one that people were crying a lot over. People were sad that he was leaving. He was very much well liked, and he was one of those unfortunate players that they just didn't have enough room to protect everybody. Do you think he's going to stay with Vegas, or do you think he's one that's going to get flipped?
I mean, I think he's more likely to stay, but you never know given the right circumstances. I think Mark Matheau is a definite flip possibility, either flip or trade at the trade deadline.
Okay.
Solid defenseman, could be a good extra body for a team that needs it going into the playoffs.
And he was sort of at the center of a little bit of drama with the Ottawa Senators, too, because they did not want to expose him, and they were trying to get Dion Phaneuf to waive his no-movement clause to be exposed so they could protect. I guess the theory was that they would protect Mark Mathot in his place, and he said, no, I'm not doing that, which, totally within his right. That's his contract. He doesn't have to, so... Yeah, I don't think they really wanted to lose him. I think that one really hurt for Ottawa.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that was the thing that didn't surprise me the most, but in watching that and trying to figure out sort of the strategy that Vegas was going for with picking this team and the selections that they did take. I mean, obviously they were going to take Marc-Andre Fleury. That was sort of a done deal.
I think they wound up doing pretty well with the goaltending. I think they're going to stick with the at least their top two.
The Arizona goalie?
And Picard.
Yeah, Picard. Okay. I did have to laugh. Did you see that tweet today? It was a picture of, is it Duke Reed or Reed Duke? I always get those flipped. It was the first player that Vegas signed. He's a junior player.
Reed Duke.
Is it Reed Duke? Okay. There was a picture of Reed Duke talking to Marc-Andre Fleury, and Vegas Golden Knights tweeted out and saying, the first Vegas Golden Knight player ever picked and the first Vegas Golden Knight goaltender, having a moment. And I'm like, but he wasn't the first one picked. Marc-Andre Fleury was the last goaltender pick, Poor Picard.
Yeah.
Left out in the cold, but... Interesting. Very interesting. It's even hard to talk about that team, like you said, because it's going to be so up in the air until we get to that 23-man roster, come October, I guess. When do they have to put their final rosters in? When do they have to be submitted?
It's a few days before the season starts.
Okay, so they still have a lot of time to play with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was also a lot of hockey Twitter was abuzz with the thought that Vegas was going to make a play for Philadelphia's draft pick slot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Let's talk about that a little bit because that's kind of interesting. They were saying they really, Patrick Laine is sort of, I don't know, it's been going back and forth between who's the number one pick and who's the number two pick because that number one and two spot seems to be really close. But I've seen a lot of speculation that Vegas would like to have Patrick Nolan as their, sort of, let's build the franchise around this strong centerman, young draft pick and develop him. But do you think Philadelphia would even go for a deal? What do they have to deal that they would want?
Three other first-round picks?
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think there's a deal there to be made. I think that if there's something there, Hextall has got to demand a lot because of those top two picks... they're more than likely NHL ready.
Mm-hmm.
And the Flyers need somebody who's NHL ready. So the only thing in return that they could possibly get is somebody who is NHL ready and who's going to add to the roster that they have more significantly than either of those two guys. And I just don't know what that is. The only thing that I could come up with is a specific goaltender that they... think Vegas can somehow swing, except the goaltenders that they picked in the expansion draft, they only picked three. They didn't pick any extra to wheel and deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it seems like that's a good goaltending tandem to have. I just, you know, unless they're going to sign Mason and flip, but I don't think that they'd flip Marc-Andre Fleury because he's now officially the face of this franchise, right?
Yeah, they're pushing that narrative hard.
Really hard. So I just don't know what kind of deal they could put together. And I don't think there's any other goal, you know, of those two goaltenders that the Flyers would be remotely interested in. So I just don't see what deal is there. I mean, I you know, there could be that I don't know about that's a three-way deal with another team. You know, anything can happen. That's what's so interesting about this year is literally anything can happen.
It does seem a little Wild West out there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The phones must be buzzing. It's been a lot of fun because I understand more this year than last year of watching this. Because I think the NHL draft was the very first thing that I watched when I was super invested in hockey, which not understanding that much about hockey was just sort of a pleasant exercise in watching like a lot of young kids get really happy and excited.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, it's definitely resonating a little bit more. But you know something? Here on Beginner's Puck, we have a segment called What the Puck, where we explain something new about hockey. And I think that would be a perfect topic to discuss, especially since I have you here to pick your brain. So why don't we learn something new about the other NHL draft happening this week? It's time for What the Puck, the things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn sometime. So, Rachel, let's talk about the draft. First of all, where is it this year?
It's in Chicago.
No, it rotates around, right? Like, it's not in the same city.
It's not outdoors, though.
Okay, well, that's good. Philadelphia had some success with the NHL draft outdoors, but...
The
NFL draft, which was sort of a big event here in Philadelphia at the Art Museum steps. It was kind of crazy. But yeah, so this is all inside at various hockey arenas. Last year was in Buffalo, which I think you went to, didn't you?
Yes, I've been to several NHL drafts.
All right. So walk us through what it is like when you walk into the building for the official NHL draft.
Sure. So usually they set up the arena so that each team has a table on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're organized usually in alphabetical order. And so each team has a table where they have all their laptops set up and telephones and the whole deal. And then there's runners. So it's usually kids of, you know, some of the execs and other people wearing team jerseys, running around, doing stuff. And then they'll have a stage set up almost like a concert stage would be in that venue.
Mm-hmm.
At one end, where that's where they announce the picks from. And they have a few sections of the seats kind of more reserved for the players and their families so they can more easily get up to the stage.
Now, these are the players that are predicted to go fairly early.
Right. So they do the first round on the first night, usually the Friday night, and then they do rounds 2 through 7 on Saturday. And I would say that people expected to go up through maybe round 3-ish will show up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's a little bit more sporadic. I would say especially European players tend to not show up unless they're, you know, top 10, top 15 picks.
So the thing that is different for this draft than, say, an NFL draft or an NBA draft, which is also happening this week, is the feeder system of these kids is different. Now, there is an age requirement. They have to be 18 by
September 15th.
September 15th. So these, I mean, mm-hmm. when we're talking about, these are kids, you know, they're young kids coming in. So, but
there's also a maximum age, though.
Okay, now what is the maximum age?
20.
Okay.
So after they had an exception to that, though, for European players. It's for North American players.
Okay. So North American players, they have to be 18 by September 15th and no older than 20. Mm-hmm. And after, like, after 20, you just try out. Like, for some reason, you weren't drafted. And there are players.
You do an amateur tryout, yeah.
Right. And there are players that were not drafted. Jordy Benn is a defenseman who was not drafted and worked his way up, for example, and was protected by Montreal this season.
Yep.
So where are these kids coming from? Because, you know, typically in the NFL and the NBA, they're coming from typically from college. They're being drafted right out of college. On the rare occasion, they're high school, but for the most part, they're college kids.
Yep. So the NCAA is the minor leagues, ostensibly.
Right.
Or the developmental system for those other leagues.
Right.
So in hockey, there's a kajillion different options for these players. So the first option is junior hockey. So that's for 16 through 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several junior hockey leagues in North America. The three main ones in Canada are the Western Hockey League, the Ontario Hockey League, and the Quebec Major Junior League, aka the Q. So, and then there's a couple other smaller leagues like the Alberta League that kids come from there. And so they'll get drafted at 18. So kind of partially part of the way through the age range of those leagues. Then there's a primary junior league in the States, the USHL. And then other players will come through the college system. So they'll be drafted in between high school and college, or right when they've just started their first year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And then some kids will be drafted direct from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly like the top prep schools like Shattuck, St. Marie, which is in Minnesota.
Which is where Sidney Crosby went.
Yes. And then there's also... there's several different conferences in college. So there's NCAA, but then there's also the NCHC and some other smaller divisions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing in the States is the USA Hockey National Developmental Training Program.
Mm-hmm.
So some kids get, instead of maybe doing junior hockey in the States and they decide they don't want to go to Canada, they're in the USA hockey training system up through the U18 squad there.
This is like the soup of hockey.
Yeah.
It's just like coming from everywhere.
And we've only talked about North America. I just thought I'd mention that.
There's all sorts of things in Europe happening too, right?
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of the countries in Europe have their own leagues. So you'll see junior leagues and more senior level leagues. Kids get drafted from, you know, the Swedish league, the Swedish second division, Finnish league, Finnish second division. There's a Russian junior league. There's a Czech league. There's an Austrian league. You know, it just goes on and on. Now, I would say that more of the international players that are drafted from Europe come from those upper level leagues and the more major countries like your Sweden, Finland, Russia, Czech Republic. Those are kind of your primary countries that that kids will come from.
So clearly there is a scouting system. So because there's so many different hockey leagues out there, because, you know, I'm sure if you follow hockey media at all, you have seen endless discussions about the hockey rankings, the draft rankings, and they usually do like the top 100. So there's people out there that are watching these kids, sometimes from a really young age, especially like I remember reading about Connor McDavid. They were talking about him when he was like 12 and keeping an eye on him. So how does the scouting system work?
So there's two different systems, I would say, two major systems. Each team has their own scouting group.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to have people placed regionally or even locally. Mm-hmm. And some of these scouts work for multiple teams, but say they'll go to all the Minneapolis area's college games. So it's a little bit complicated there. And then there is NHL Central Scouting. So where the information is available to all the teams. And Central Scouting is the one that does the official rankings.
Okay. But everybody does the unofficial rankings.
Everybody does unofficial. But there's also, there's a difference between the rankings and a mock draft. Mm-hmm. So rankings is just pure ability. And the Central Scouting rankings that come out will split the players between North America and Europe, and then by skater and by goalie, and rank them accordingly. Mm-hmm. But mock drafts will take into consideration what each team might be looking for that year. Mm-hmm. So the order of the rankings is not going to match up with the mock drafts that people do.
Okay. So it's like we talked about, Vegas Golden Knights is really looking for a strong centerman, and they're looking, you know, even if the top ranked draft pick that year, maybe a goalie, they would skip, if they had the number one pick, they might skip that and go down, a couple spots to pick the exact position that they need. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got that. So it's been really interesting watching it this year, because we talked about the combine the last episode or a few episodes ago, where they invite, I think it was like 130 this year. So they invite the kids that they think are going to be at the top of the heap of all of these kids out there who were trying to make it to the NHL. And they put them through their, different physical tests, and they do interviews, and, teams spend a lot of time, especially if they're in that top 15, that first round, like looking at these kids and looking and spending time trying to figure out if the intangible bits are going to work for their team as well. So how important do you think those intangible things are to a team when they're looking at a prospect?
I don't know. I don't know if the interview you're talking about.
Yeah, the interviews or going and watching them,
I think it's more talking to coaches, talking to trainers. It's seeing what they do in the team setting as far as leadership, as far mm-hmm. as, coming through and in the clutch, in the context of the game. And I think just some of those interviews is just kind of dotting I's and crossing T's as far as personality or philosophy. Mm-hmm. Is this kid going to work with our coaching style?
Right.
All of those things.
Okay. So the coaches and the staff and the scouts and everybody's done all their homework. They have their guy. They know mm-hmm. who they're going to pick. And we talked about this a long time ago when Philadelphia got the second round pick. Like, oh my God, who saw that coming?
I know. It's actually been interesting for me as a Flyers fan because, given our draft pick history, I've had to do a lot of research and reading up on a lot of the prospects mm-hmm. because with a mid-round pick or third of the way through the first round pick, it could be any number of guys.
Right.
And so I want to know about all these players. But this year I was like, nope, I don't need to do any of that.
the hockey media is doing all my work for me.
I just got to know about these two guys, and that's it. And at least for the first round.
And we also talked about, sort of the crazy side deals that go along, because Dallas this year got an extra pick because Patrick Eves played so many games when they traded him late in the season, and Anaheim mm-hmm. got to the playoffs. So a second round pick turned into a first round pick. So there's all kinds of crazy conditions that are put on picks and trading and things. So a team may actually end up with a lot more picks than would normally be warranted because of the way they've played the game. So everybody's sitting at their little table with their laptops, their phones, the kids bringing them bottles of water and running around like crazy, doing the runner stuff. they make their picks. And you said, you know, the first two, the top two prospects you said were NHL ready, but a lot of these kids are not NHL ready yet. They have a lot of potential, but they're not quite ready to play in, you know, in the big leagues. So what happens to them if they're not NHL ready?
So most teams have a full training camp where they'll have a rookie camp mm-hmm. for all the new drafted people or newly graduated. And like you alluded to earlier, some guys get signed to contracts out of college who maybe weren't drafted. So, you know, if those guys are trying out or get signed right out of college but haven't been to a training camp yet because they weren't drafted, they'll go to a rookie camp mm-hmm. right over the summer. And then they'll have a full training camp where the teams will invite. So it'll be all the big boy team guys plus everybody that's on their AHL team mm-hmm. and then all of their drafted players and all of the players that they may have signed out of college like that. And then they'll invite maybe 8 or 10 guys that they're thinking about signing probably to minor league contracts mm-hmm. to try to skate at their camp. So, you know, you'll have like 65, 68 guys could be initially at camp. And then it just gets whittled down. Now, where do these guys end up? The ones that are still in college and planning on finishing will go back to college and finish their development there. Mm-hmm. Some of them leave college early, but not as much. Most guys graduate. And then the guys that are in junior hockey, most of them will go back to their junior team and finish out at least that year and come back the next year and see if they're NHL ready. Mm-hmm. And they'll do that year to year until, you know, they hit their max out age of junior hockey. And then it's kind of like a, okay, what's happening kind of decision point there. And then some guys obviously will be on the AHL team. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, your select roster makes the big boy team.
So we
so, oh yeah, and there's also the ECHL level right, as well.
Which is the level, you know, below AHL.
Below, correct. Okay. And so there's an interesting caveat there, though, where you can keep a guy up for up to 10 games mm-hmm. to give him a tryout at the NHL level. Now, he's got to be rostered.
Right. And this is the beginning of the season.
You can
bring this guy in for up to 10 games.
But if you're like, I think he still needs some more development, you can send him back to his junior team. It's only for junior hockey players, though.
Right. And when
Or guys playing in some other, like, developmental programs. Right.
So when you make that decision, like, when does the entry-level contract kick in? Because an entry-level contract will, you know, gives you so many years.
At the 11th game.
At the 11th game. And at that point, that person is on your roster. What is it, a three? Mm-hmm. Is it typically a three-year contract? And so if you have a player that's not quite ready, you don't want to burn through that first year of your entry-level contract because you want to keep this kid cheap for the first 3 years until you see what he's got going on. So that's, you know, the Flyers didn't do that last year because they had, we had two rookies, we had Travis Konecny and Ivan Provorov, who were drafted, 2015 drafts? Or 2014?
No, it was 2016.
Was it 2016? Oh, the 26. No, they weren't drafted in 2016. But anyway, they didn't. When they came up and went.
Yeah, it was 2015.
2015. Okay, so they had a year where they weren't ready. So they went mm-hmm. back to their junior hockey leagues. Yes. And they came back up for training camp this year. And I was actually at training camp this year and watching them because everybody was buzzing about these two. And they were brought up, you know, our GM said, okay, these guys are ready. And he said, they're ready. I'm not going to do this tryout thing because he felt that it kind of might have messed with their confidence a little bit. So that was a situation where, you know, he had superb confidence that they would that they would be ready. And there was a little stumbles in the beginning, I think, with Provorov. He had a couple rocky games, but, you know, got his legs pretty quickly under him. How frequently?
Yeah, there's another thing that teams do with some of their prospects at the back end of the season.
Okay.
So if you have a drafted player that just graduated college, but there's still more games left for your team that year,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the NHL level or the AHL, a guy who's officially finished their college career can then sign their pro contract because they don't need NCAA eligibility anymore and finish out the remainder of the pro season.
Now, they did that in Boston, didn't they? With Charlie McAvoy? I'm trying mm-hmm. to think. Okay.
And Johnny Gaudreau did that.
Okay. Yeah, I do remember. I remember reading, and I'm amazed that I remember pulled that out because I wasn't quite sure of the name. But I remember that being kind of a big deal. Him coming in towards the end and getting some pretty big minutes playing.
Because... So, and the Flyers did that too. Well, the Flyers signed somebody who hadn't been drafted.
Who's that?
Vecchione.
Okay. Yes. And he was at Princeton.
It was either Princeton or one of the Boston schools.
Yeah, around there. Okay. See, this is what happens when we talk about things I don't have notes for. It's like very questioning of what I remember, maybe, what I don't.
Maybe he was the one that went to Union. Yeah.
I thought he went to Union with Ghost. Spare. Yeah.
Yeah, he went to Union with Ghost.
Okay. Because I think there was a little bit of, yes, you should come be a Flyer.
Yeah.
It's nice here. We have cookies. Do this. All right, so we've got this was confusing to me when it first started because I'm like, okay, where are all these kids going? Now they're ours, but they're not really ours. Mm-hmm. They're off and they're playing someplace else, or they may be under contract still in another country, because didn't that happen with our Russian draft pick last year?
Yes. So teams will sometimes draft players that say play for a KHL team.
Which is the Russian Hockey League.
The Russian Hockey League. And they're under contract, but it's drafting their rights so that if that guy ever decided to come over, your team would own the rights to that guy and have first shake at signing them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a whole nother conversation. That could be a whole different thing, like contract back and forth with the KHL.
Right. So, but, and some of them that are under contracts with, say, like the Swedish Senior League,
mm-hmm.
you know, will play there until the NHL thinks they're ready or gives them a shot. With the sorry, guys, we're using all Flyers examples because that's what I know. Oscar Lindblom.
Right.
Is playing in the Swedish league.
Now, I do remember hearing about a conversation. I'm pretty sure it was Sweden that sent a contingency over to the big GM meeting that they have every year to try to convince them not to draft their kids to bring them over to play in the AHL level, because they felt that their developmental team was just as strong and their kids would get more playing time and would develop faster in their own league. So I there's a little bit of push and pull between some of these international leagues and the NHL and when they're going to let their kids come over or when they think it's appropriate for them to come over.
Yeah, there can be.
Okay. Very cool.
So, yeah. So, but Lindblom is one of those like diamond in the rough guys, right? Mm-hmm. So he was drafted by the Flyers in the fifth round, stayed over in Sweden, and he just kicked it into a higher gear this past year, and there's a good chance he'll make the Flyers next year.
That would be interesting. There's mm-hmm. so many really good prospects like in the pipeline for the Flyers. Very excited to see what goes on. I think another topic of conversation would be maybe for another episode to talk about players that are drafted really high and then just don't meet those expectations of that point in the draft, because you're speculating a little bit when you take these kids at 18. Like, are they going to develop into the player that you think they're going to be, say at 24 or 25? Sometimes you get a Jamie Benn who was drafted, what, 126 or something? And now, the NHL just did a really interesting thing where they went back part of their anniversary celebration and they redrafted the draft classes, I think, for the last 5, 10, and 15 years based on where the players are now. Like, if they had to draft those players today, how would that shake out? And I think Jamie Benn got bumped up to second in that year's draft class. So you never know. It's a crapshoot. Have there been any draft surprises since you've been a fan, that somebody that's drafted really high and flamed out, or perhaps somebody that drafted lower that was a star?
Oh, there's tons of examples. I can't think of like one, of course, off the top of my head.
That's because I'm surprising
you. Yeah.
I'm springing it on.
It's usually like, I think, goaltenders, because you just really never know. So people just draft a ton of them, but never too early in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting thing that's happened with the draft, is that over time, just goaltenders, like, you don't generally see them drafted until second round at the earliest, but usually third round.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting you said that, because there's been all sorts. Last night, because we're recording this on Thursday, which is the day after the NHL Awards, there was all sorts of comparisons of, you know, the day that Marc-Andre Fleury left the Penguins was like the 12th anniversary of the day that he was drafted, number one in his draft year. So that has definitely changed. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for illuminating us on the draft process, because I think it can be, you know, people that are used to, you know, especially the NFL and the NBA drafts, which are, you know, probably the two were the bigger ones here in the States, particularly. This is a weird beast. It is a very strange thing. So I think you gave a very good explanation of that. So we always close our episode out with a hockey tidbit, which is something, just a little thing that just delights you about hockey. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you the opportunity, since Eric is not here, if there is something that just delights you about hockey that you would like to share with our listeners.
So there's something that you may have seen during the awards and expansion draft, but happens usually when the Stanley Cup gets presented, and definitely happens at the draft, which is what made me think of it, is the booing of Gary Bettman.
Now explain who Gary Bettman is.
He is the commissioner of the National Hockey League.
He's the big cheese.
Yes. So it's kind of a, you know, a love-hate or hate-hate relationship that people have with him. And I think, you know, he's been very successful in growing the NHL, and he's you know, pretty much responsible for the Southern expansion and the Sun Belt teams, which has been very good. But he's also done some really stupid things, and especially with some rule changes and the lockouts especially. And so people just boo him. Wherever he goes, he gets booed. And I find it to be delightful every time it happens. It just doesn't get old. You know, he steps up to a microphone, loud boos. He starts presenting the Stanley Cup, seemingly something that should be dignified. Nope, let's boo Gary. I love it. I love it. And I went to the NHL draft in Philadelphia a few years ago, and Flyers fans are the best. I don't care what Erica says. I heard that last week, Erica. We're the best. So we, you know, I think we did our city proud and booed him pretty loudly. And there was, so he did his little intro speech, which was, I think, a full 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Sustained booing the entire time.
That is quite impressive. I wasn't aware of this phenomena until the Vegas Golden Knights did their big reveal of their, it was one of their reveals, because they had a couple, it may have been their logo or something, and they had all sorts of technical difficulties with that presentation. It was rather hilarious. So it was basically Gary Bettman and the GM, and I think George McPhee might have been up there as well. The owner and George McVeigh, and just trying to fill time and just trying to make some space to give the technical people time to fix the video. And there was a small but passionate crowd, like on the Las Vegas Strip, just booing their hearts out. And he took it in stride and says, I can tell
you. Oh, he loves it.
You guys are going to be a hockey town, I can tell. You've got the booing thing down.
Yep.
Which I thought was good sport there. So that was the first time that I really noticed it, which is kind of...
That's the great thing, is that the fans love doing it and he loves hearing it. And, everybody has fun.
It's one of those weird hockey things that other hockey or other sport fans probably don't get. So very good hockey tidbit. Well, Rachel, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming over and filling in for Erica and dropping some intense draft knowledge, which I think we're all the better for as we watch the draft tonight as this podcast comes out, at least round one. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Great. So you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. And remember, hockey is for everyone, especially for you. Beginner's Puck is a Castrio production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at BeginnersPuck or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our extensive show notes at theincomparable.com/puck.